And welcome back. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I'm filling in for Dean Richards today from 9 to 1. So don't worry, Dean fans. You're in good hands. I spoke with Dean at the beginning of the show. He told me how to babysit. So I made sure I told him I'd be no texting. I'm not going to invite my boyfriends over. No pizza. Just going to keep my eye on you, the listener, and keep you in good hands. And part of my goal in doing that is having my next guest on, Mr. Rick Kogan from the Chicago Tribune.
Hello,
Hello
James.
Rick. How are you doing?
Happy Sunday morning.
It is so great to. I didn't know that that a Rick Kogan got up this early.
I get up this early.
Yeah.
I used to have a show at 6:30 on Sunday
morning. Was it that early?
For those of you who've forgotten.
Yes, yeah, but now you're nocturnal.
Yes, it was that early.
But now you're nocturnal.
And that sort of suits my lifestyle a lot better. But I'm happy to be here. It's nice to talk to you on the radio.
It's great to talk to you. In fact, I've known, and Rick, I have to say that I've always was a great admirer of yours as a budding journalist, and Rick is one of the landmarks here of Chicago journalism, the mayor of Old Town, if you will.
Yeah, or the last newspaper.
But Rick was kind enough, I wasn't doing a favor. He didn't know me from Adam. I sent him, think about this, this was 22 years ago. I sent you a story unsolicited,
yeah,
and you were the editor of the Tempo section at that time.
Correct.
And you gave me a byline in the Tribune.
Wow.
22 years ago. It was a story, of course, about Elton John.
What else?
Elton John was putting out a line of glasses.
It was early in your relationship with Elton John, too. Man.
It was. He was putting out a line of glasses to support his AIDS Foundation.
Nice.
And in fact, I sent this to you unsolicited. I never heard anything. I figured, what are the odds? And then one day I got a call from you, and you said, I need
Who the hell are you?
Yeah, but you said, I need a picture for the story.
Yeah.
And I said, what story? Because it had been like 2 or 3 weeks. And you said, this Elton John story, it's running tomorrow.
Well, you're very antsy. You didn't hear back in 2 and 3 weeks, and you're going crazy, and you're like, what story? What story? You were churning them out so fast, you'd forgotten what story you sent to Tempo.
Well, you actually did. We did meet one time before that, and you gave me an assignment. And I went to interview a very avant-garde artist, and I did a spec story.
Did we run it?
No.
Okay. Well, you'd obviously,
so that's why I was shocked.
Obviously matured.
That's why I was
avant-garde artist to Elton John.
That's why I was shocked when you printed the other one that I just sort of sent you without being assigned.
Yeah, we do go back a ways.
But so it's great to talk to you. And this was talk about being on the same wavelength. So when I'm devising the show this week and what to put on, obviously I'm looking around the entertainment world and there is this production of Grease that's going to be on Channel 32
6 o'clock tonight.
And it's going to be a live version. And so I said, a lot of people, especially in Chicago, are not aware that Grease started right here in Chicago.
It is, to my mind, the great, great theatrical phenomenon in the history of Chicago theater.
What else?
Nothing can come close.
No.
Yeah, Osage County was a great play. It made a fine movie.
But not Grease. Grease is a pop culture phenomenon.
No question.
It's iconic. And a lot of people forget that the show started here. It was based on the 50s high school experience at Taft High School on the Northwest Side.
Well, Jim Jacobs at Taft High School and Warren Casey, his co-writer, who people have forgotten because Warren died of AIDS when he was only 58 years old. These two guys, they're sort of bust-out actors in town. Jim Jacobs worked at the Tribune.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was an ad copywriter for a very short time. And as much as I love Jim, he legendarily was the worst ad copywriter in the history of the Tribune. And old ad copywriters who worked with him have got to be plenty jealous.
Yeah, right. No kidding. Because he's a trillionaire at this point.
These two guys just decided, hey, let's write a play about high school. Duh. No one, Jim, no one. The people in it, the people seeing it could have ever imagine what
the great thing is that so I called Rick because I figured if anybody has information about possibly getting in touch with any of the original people associated with the show or if anybody had possibly seen the original show, it's got to be Rick Kogan. So I send you an email and then Rick says, well, not only do I have some information about it, but I'm in the midst of writing a front page story for the Sunday Tribune on this exact topic.
You know what spurred me to it, Jimmy? As I picked up Vanity Fair this month, and there's a long piece, and a pretty good piece, about the movie.
Right.
Hooked on this live theatrical production about Alan Carr, the legendary producer who's from Highland Park.
Right.
And how they made the movie. And it talked to a bunch of people who were in the film and, you know, that it cost $6 million to make and has made something like $400 million, just the film.
Unbelievable.
Just the film.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm reading the piece, and there's one paragraph in there about this show began on Lincoln Avenue in Chicago with two guys who wrote the show. And I thought, that's really unfair. It's moved so far beyond that, but it should be remembered because that part of the story is the phenomenon.
And not only that, but, I mean, to your point, when they made the movie version, they completely gutted the whole Chicago connection.
Oh, of course. They did that when they went to Broadway.
Yeah.
You couldn't have references on Broadway or in New York to Foster Avenue Beach and the Edgewater Beach Hotel.
Right.
It just isn't going to fly.
Yeah.
So Jim and Warren, and God love them for it, virtually rewrote the play. The play as it was originally presented in Chicago at the old Kingston Mines Theater on Lincoln Avenue was roughly three-fourths dialogue and one-fourth music.
Wow.
And the two producers, whose names, because they didn't produce much anymore but made enough money from it, took it to New York, said, hey, you guys, rewrite the show.
Hmm.
Put more songs. We need more songs.
Yeah.
And so after every evolution of it, yes, the movie was watered down, even if you think of it as watered down, but it was certainly made more commercial.
Yeah.
So who's to argue with that? Jim Jacobs told me, for writing this piece, he says, look, Rick, you know, when you sell something, you lose control. He was not consulted on the movie at all. He has not been consulted. He said, great. He goes, no phone calls, no emails, no texts about this live television version.
Just a check.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, I think it's incalculable how much money Jim Jacobs.
Well, and now tell me, because you saw the original. So if most people are, you know, used to the movie version, that's where they know Grease from. And if they've seen now Grease on the stage since then, the stage production is always based on the movie.
No question.
So
no
the original.
It was a lot tougher. I mean,
It was a little sexier, too, right? It was a little more risque.
Yeah. I mean, there was the great Polly Penn, who was 16 or 17 years old when she was cast as Patty or whatever the nerdy cheerleader was who thought Danny was in love with her. She had to hide the script from her parents because there were so many raw moments and rough words in it, and only showed it to him after the first review.
So there were like F-bombs and the whole thing. Right?
Oh, yeah.
So do you remember seeing the original?
I saw it five times.
Wow.
Six. Well, the reason being, what was I doing then? I was driving a cab, and Polly Penn, the youngest member of the cast, was the younger sister of my best friend from high school.
Oh, how funny.
Gary Houston, whose face you will see on the cover of the art section today, was my father's assistant at the Sun-Times. Gary was a writer and editor. And so I'm driving
a cab,
and I can get free tickets. Oh, my God. At least five times.
Now in retrospect, I mean, it's easy to say, but do you remember, did you think it was really good? Did you really enjoy it, or was it okay?
What I thought, and I remember distinctly, I thought, this is great fun.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
And that's what Grease is. I mean, even though, you know, like I said, the movie version was certainly watered down, you know, from the original version and made more commercial. The funny thing is, what most people remember from Grease, now obviously Summer Nights was a song I played, Grease Lightning.
Yeah,
those are from the original. But the songs,
not
you're the
Grease
one that.
Grease Lightning. That's not.
That wasn't even the original.
Nope.
So that was later on Broadway.
Yeah.
Wow. So Summer Nights, though.
Yep.
Okay. But so we've got You're the One That I Want, Hopelessly Devoted to You, Sandy, when the hot dog jumps into the bun, and then the title song, Grease, which was written by Barry Gibb.
Yeah.
Those four songs, basically, when people think about the movie Grease or Grease in general, those were all written for the movie.
Yeah.
They had nothing to do with the original play.
No question. No question. So, but in the transference from Chicago, the biggest transfer, because I saw it on Broadway in New York after it opened, and because I was just curious what had happened to it, and it was watered down then. I think that's the big watering down, the transfer from Chicago to off-Broadway to then Broadway.
That is
the biggest change.
Yeah.
What was on Broadway at the Royal Theater, and the other amazing thing is, in its day, Grease started there in February of 1972, a year after it premiered.
Right, 71 here, right.
And then became, until A Chorus Line came along, the longest-running musical in Broadway history. Think about that.
That is, I mean, once again, with the Chicago roots, that's unheard of because New York is so provincial, and there, if anything doesn't happen in New York, it doesn't happen. So for a Chicago play,
that's the definition of phenomenon.
Yeah,
I'll tell you right. That,
well, you know, it has to be good.
Yeah, it had mass crowd appeal, man, and it and the movie. It's a generational thing. There have been certifiable 123,000 productions of this musical since it began in 1971. Well, this means some high school shows.
Right.
Other shows, most of them, as you're right, Jim, based on the film.
Well, I know I've seen Coming Attractions, that the version that's going to be on tonight on Channel 32 at 6 is going to definitely be based on the movie version. And
oh, no,
that's the
question.
Play. Yeah, I mean, they're singing Grease, the song.
This version is likely to turn on yet another generation, because this is very palatable. Someone like my daughter Fiona, who's 11, is probably going to watch this thing.
Oh, sure.
And think it's totally cool, and Grease becomes part of her cultural DNA.
Well, you know, and I read that Vanity Fair article, and what was so interesting on that is that Travolta made Saturday Night Fever and followed it up with Grease.
Right.
But
Saturday Night Fever had not been released.
Had not been released. So he was actually showing his castmates on Grease cuts of Saturday Night Fever, saying, do you think this movie's any good?
Yeah, I know. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch.
Oh, can you imagine that?
Oh.
That's why there was a while there between Disco in 77,
yeah,
the 50s, 60s kind of revamp with Grease in 78, and then Urban Cowboy in 1980. I feared what the next John Travolta movie would be, because whatever it was, that's where the next fad was going to be.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's setting the bar so high.
I mean,
so high.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the thing about it is so much money was made from that movie. These guys, Travolta and Olivia Newton-John and all these others, are not in it in the way the Star Wars people are in it.
No.
I mean, they did not
right.
make...
Those days of having points and all that were not...
No, but who knew? this movie was really... And the Vanity Fair piece is good, ladies and gentlemen. You should read it. It's very good.
Yeah.
But that was on the fly, too. No one thought this movie was going to be successful. It was, in its day, the most successful movie musical until...
And the soundtrack was at number one. And
the soundtrack.
It remains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And until Mamma Mia came around.
Yeah. So, incredible. Well, we're talking to Rick Hogan here about Grease, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and whatever else is on the bewildering mind of
whatever
one
you like.
Rick Hogan, the mayor of Old Town, right here on WGN. And welcome back to WGN, AM 720. Elton Jim Toronto with you on a Sunday morning. Your morning cup of Jim. Your morning cup of Joe.
Yes, enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy.
As I said, I'm here with Rick Hogan, the mayor of Old Town.
I'm more like the mayor of Michigan Avenue.
Is that what it is, Michigan Avenue?
I like that.
But you are certainly one of the landmarks in Chicago journalism.
Thanks.
And I remember about a year or so ago, Rick was telling us a story on the radio how he met with Robert De Niro.
Indeed.
To do a version of a book that you wrote about the early days of Chicago.
Yes. We got sucked into the Hollywood morass.
Is that...
I've got about four projects that are you know, have some kind of strange life in Hollywood.
So you're one of those stories, huh?
Well, you know this. You know the entertainment business. It's crazy. Everybody wants to take a flyer. The best ever was when Harold Ramis was alive, and he bought the rights to a book I wrote with Maury Posley called Everybody Pays.
Oh, wow.
Harold owned the rights for 3 years.
Oh,
he had guys fly in here. We'd get a call saying, hey, my name is David Black, and I've just written a screenplay for Everybody Pays. And more was really, is it going to get made? Is it going to get made? Well, I'd like to come in and talk to you guys. And so they would fly in. Harold had a deal with Warner Brothers, and Harold wanted to executive produce the movie.
Yeah.
But 3 years, of a contract.
So you can't even get excited. When you even get
I don't.
Yeah, I mean,
I
when
don't.
You even get a nibble, you have to just say,
well,
whatever.
I would get excited, I suppose, if either, who's the most bankable, if either George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, or Tom Hanks called and said, I'd like to make a movie of your book, then I might get excited.
Well, hey,
but
George Lucas lives down the street.
Oh, I know.
So that's not impossible.
I know. It is impossible. It is impossible.
Why? Go to Whole Foods. What? Run into him at Treasure Island or something.
See, but I don't want to run into him and say, hey, Mr. Lucas, can you make a movie of my book? No, that's not the way I want it. That's not the way I want it.
You want him to call you.
Yes, and that's the only thing. I don't want to get involved. I don't want to go out to Hollywood and hand out scripts and or books. It's a messy world out there.
Well, just how much Rick Kogan, I mean, because Rick is a fixture here at WGN, as I said, how long have you been writing for the Tribune?
Mid-'80s, right? Late 80s, yeah. After I left. Well, first I worked for the great Chicago Bygone Daily News and right. Then the Sun-Times, and I left the Sun-Times when Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, you left when Ryko left.
And 58 other people.
Yeah.
We all left.
Oh, you
were part of that. I had decided
then
that I'd been writing for newspapers since I was 16, so I'd take a break and maybe work on a book and wrote a couple books. And then they offered me the job of TV critic at the Chicago Tribune in 88 or 9, and that's not a job you freelance. And I did that, and that's been it.
Well, to prove how Chicago is in this man's DNA, I never knew this. I did a little research, even though I've known you for quite a long time. Little research. Is it true that you were named after Ricardo's restaurant?
Sadly, yes.
Ricardo's, which is now what? Phil Stefani's?
Phil Stefani's 437.
437.
Corner of Russian Hubbard.
But
My parents met at Ricardo's in 1948.
And your parents were both media types?
My father was a book author, lifelong newspaper man, good guy. My mother worked for the Tribune for a time. And they met there, were great friends of Rick Ricardo, the owner. They babysat his kids.
And that was kind of like the spot where anybody who was anybody went to eat.
No question.
Yeah.
And to drink. So they named me Rick.
How funny.
I know. But.
Because I thought your name would be Billy Goat.
What?
I thought your name would be Billy.
My father, thank God.
Billy
my
Kogan.
My parents didn't hang out at the Goat. Thank God for that, Jimmy. They did, but what happened, I'm in third grade. And Mrs. Corrigan, my teacher at LaSalle School, kept calling me Richard in the first days of class. And I said, no, Mrs. Corrigan, it's Rick. And that's not a name. That's a nickname.
Oh, jeez.
So I made the charming mistake of telling my mother. I go, how was school, honey? I go, I got a problem there, Mom. Mrs. Corrigan calls me Richard. Well, I'll fix that. That's when I learned that I was named after Rick Ricardo.
Oh, so you never knew that?
No, I mean, what parent says? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe kids do. I don't know if kids say, why do I have the name Jim?
Yeah, my middle name is Bennigan.
Yeah, maybe middle name.
That's where my mom and dad met at Bennigan's.
There you go. There you go. And other people have the names of cities where the child was conceived. Yeah. But so I eventually asked my mom when I was a little older. I said, you know, look, I've been going to Ricardo's, and it's my understanding that Rick Ricardo spelled his name R-I-C in the Italian.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I said, why am I R-I-C-K then? Mm. And she said, well, we didn't want to be unconventional.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, Mom, you named me after a saloon keeper. Isn't that unconventional enough?
But that is such a great story. That's so perfect because you have become to epitomize the city, and you are one of its leading historians. And if I could just throw this out to you, too,
yes.
as a book idea. Because I don't have the ability to do this. But you've been around here long enough.
My name is Elton James.
No, I want to find out what really did Richard J. Daley do for this city, aside from being the mayor for 20 years and getting reelected. Did he really do anything in those 20 years, aside from getting people jobs and amassing a patronage? Because I really believe that the shape that this city is in now is greatly because of 40 years of Daley's.
There's no question about it.
Look
at Cleveland. Look at the other great northern industrial cities and what happened to them. One of Daley's great, I don't want to bore you with the story. One of Daley's worst mistakes was in 1968, after Martin Luther King had died and there were riots across the west side of the city, the Democratic Convention was coming to Chicago, and Mayor Daley and his cronies were not worried about hippies making trouble. They were worried about African-Americans making trouble. So in a city council meeting, at Daley's behest, they decided to change the name of South Parkway to Dr. Martin Luther
King
Junior Drive. It was tossing a bone to them.
So to give the African-American community.
The interesting thing about this whole story, that's why King Drive is King Drive. Right. But there were some aldermen saying, wait a minute, why do we, let's make it a whole street, like Western Avenue or maybe even Halsted Street. And Daley knew this city. I don't think our current mayor knows it the way he did. He wouldn't do that because he knew
it was going to go into white neighborhoods.
That it would be the signs would be torn down, defaced.
But I just wonder what we hear about him getting elected so much, but I wonder what he actually really did. But that's another topic. Thank you, Rick Hogan, for joining me here on Sunday morning, talking about Greece and everything else.
You run a good show here.
I appreciate it. You are you're always a wealth of information and fun. I appreciate it.